and to coach life.
Welcome to Coach Life, where we talk to coaches from all sporting backgrounds. We discuss their coaching qualifications, their beliefs, their experiences, their players, the environment they set, and just their coaching life in general.
So I've got quite a few questions here, but my first one for you, obviously you're a rugby coach, so I will confess, I love rugby. I don't know loads about it.
Not a problem.
But I love watching it and I love playing it. But you know, some of the rules I'm like a passive fan, let's put it that way.
Yeah, no worries.
All right. So like some of the terminology you might say, I'll be like, huh, what the hell?
I'll try, and if I do, please tell me if I start talking jargon, but I'll try and clarify as I go if I do. So
yeah, no, that's it. I'll sort of ask, you know, what was that?
Yeah, no worries, mate, please do.
Okay, so what does your philosophy look like? So whether it's an adult team, youth team, or just in general?
Yeah, I think, and I hope this crosses over to most sports, really, that there's obviously a big push in the coaching world, but I really believe we need to be creating decision makers who are comfortable in what is, in both of our sports, a very sort of chaotic and ever-changing environment. The phrase I use a lot is sort of creating players that are comfortable being uncomfortable. Almost they don't get that sort of paralysis via analysis of what could be quite a chaotic environment, but actually they're able to, I suppose, perceive certain cues and then attribute that to certain actions or thought processes and then have the confidence in their decisions to find an appropriate solution to the problems they see in front of them. I'll kind of talk about it a little bit more when we talk about like the one-to-one stuff. But another phrase I use is players that have multiple tools in their toolbox. And then it's my role as the coach to put them in different environments or different jobs. And then they've got to select the appropriate tool for the appropriate job in front of them.
I love that. Creating players that are comfortable being uncomfortable. That I'm stealing that.
Please do. Yeah,
brilliant.
It was kind of the old, and I use old very loosely, and I do apologise if I kind of offend anyone, because I think there's a time and a place for imparting knowledge and giving knowledge and be a bit more tell. But I think it's that old way of us as coaches feeling like we have to be the keeper of all knowledge. And so this is how I played and this is how I trained and this is how you are going to play. The fact that we are playing against humans, we're playing against another animal that is unpredictable. We can't have a perfect X's and O's game plan, because I could assume that this defender is going to move here, whether it's rugby or football. I can assume he's going to move here because I've done this and that's going to create that. But actually that defender, and this is your under 10s and this is my seniors, all of a sudden that defender's picking his nose and he didn't go where he should have gone. And if we don't create players that can recognise that and adapt, they're not going to be the players that can keep evolving their game in all of these infinite combinations of what could happen on the field, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that word you just used there, evolve, is exactly what I was just going to say. I get people coming up to me or like talking about coaching in general, or it might be parents talking about their coach's philosophy, and they sort of say, well, you know, back in my day we did this, the coach used to do this, he used to stop the session, he used to pick out the player that was doing something wrong. And my answer to all of that is, right, okay, have you still got a Nokia 3210
or they're probably still going?
Yeah. Or if, have you evolved and you've got, you know, a brand new iPhone? Oh, well, I've got an iPhone. Right. So that's evolved. So why can't coaching?
I think it's interesting because, and that's why I say I don't want to offend, because I do think there's a time and a place. Again, I'll talk later about the word drill has almost become a swear word amongst coaches. What, you use drill? Used in the right way, I think there's a time and a place. I think used in the right way, there is a time for knowing where all your players are going to be across two or three passages of play in rugby or two or three sequences in football. There is a time to stop the session and tell an individual or a selection of players. But I think we've got to use those previous experiences to develop and boost and bolster what we're then evolving. We'll use that word again, what we're evolving and changing into. I think, you know, you can't be standing still because the game will pass you by. I know it's a cliche, but if you look at where rugby's come from and the athletes that are now being created, and same in football, it's like I watched the 2007 World Cup final, us against South Africa, and sort of after 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I was almost tempted to turn it over because it's such a different game to what we see now, but it's such a different game to what I believe the game can and should be. And that's only in brackets 13 years ago. So, yeah, I think you've just got to be, yes, we can be, our previous experiences and what we learned from how we were taught can certainly shape what we do. But I think as coaches, we've got to have the willingness to learn and change and the bravery to do so.
Yeah, definitely. And staying on your philosophy, we've spoken beforehand and I was blown away by the fact that you've been in the presence of Eddie Jones and you've actually been around him when he's been coaching. So how was that? First of all, what was he like? And second, how has that influenced you?
Yeah, it was an amazing opportunity and it kind of took me by surprise, the fact that I had that opportunity to do so. And certainly for me in the year I was with him and the team and the other coaching staff as well, it totally changed my philosophy. He is a fantastic guy. He's a man of his word. So if he says he'll sit down and have a coffee with you, he'll have a coffee with you. He promised me that he'd come and do a coaching session with the team that I was with at the time. We set a date. It turned out that he had a function that he had to be at and he couldn't get out of that. And I just assumed, well, look, I might have had my chance, so be it. But he did everything he could to find a second date and eventually come down and do a session for our team. So, you know, a man with a huge amount of integrity. And I think doing what he says he was going to do garners his respect from his players and everyone else.
In terms
of learning from him, I suppose his ability to build relationships with people. So I was, you know, essentially a nobody, you know, going in there as the intern, sort of carry the balls for him, lay out some cones and do bits and pieces. But he always made an effort to say, how am I doing? How's my day been? How's my last week been? And towards the end, I was lucky enough to spend a lot of time with him, certainly on the pitch. And he would open up to me about, you know, that was a great session, or actually we didn't quite hit this, or I'm a bit annoyed because of that. And he didn't have to build that relationship with me, but he did.
And I think, I mean, you've just touched on something there. You said that you were a nobody, but I think everybody starts out as a nobody at some point. And it's good that he is remembering what it's about. And it's, like you said, relationships. And he's still humble enough to realise that now he's somebody, but he can still pay attention to you who thought you were a nobody.
Absolutely. It was obviously coming in with England. It was a program he brought into the RFU. So I was one of the community rugby coaches for England at the time. And he essentially said, I want to pick up a couple of the CRCs and bring them in on an internship. So I was lucky enough to be the first one. And he did it with at least two, maybe even three other after me. So, yeah, I think that's brilliant that he's kind of, as you say, humble enough to pass that knowledge down and realise that you all need that little start somewhere. So, but he was brilliant with the players as well. He'd take real care to talk to all of them and know how to pitch things. So someone like Owen Farrell, you know, not that they're not all like this, but Owen Farrell, the consummate professional, he knows he can go up to him and say, you know, you didn't quite make this kick or make this play, or you missed that tackle over there, knowing that that will spur Owen on. Whereas someone like a Billy Vunipola, he knows that he maybe wants to unwind. Family's very important to him. So actually he'll talk about, have you spoke to your family recently or your cousins? Or so it's knowing what motivates each player and then how to pitch that conversation with them to get the best out of them or to help them unwind or to focus them. I think that was massively important of what I got out of him on that interpersonal level.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. And I've taken the same from him. I mean, I'm not lucky enough to have seen him like you, but I watch so many of his videos, his talks, his interviews. And that for me is what I'm trying to do now. Yes, I still work on skills, technical stuff, tactical stuff, but instead of when the players just turn up, instead of just like, right, this is what we're doing today, and it's just always football or rugby or whatever, I now try and connect with them, like, you know, what you've been doing at school. You know, how's your brother? his sister. You know, some have got 4 or 5 brothers and sisters, and just engaging in other topics shows that you care about them more, doesn't it? Instead of just, right, switch on, boys, this is what we're doing today, you know.
Yeah, it kind of ties in with the gym stuff, you know, I was alluding to at the start of our little chat. Working for the gym, we want to show our members that they're more than just a membership and a piece of paper. We care about them. Yeah. And I think that's massively important in the sporting realm. You know, people are going to come to sport for different reasons. Some want to be the world's best. Some want to just have a run around with their mates. But regardless of that, if they know you care for them, they will give you whatever their best is. So yeah, I think that's fantastic that you're doing that and getting your under 10s used to that now. And it will round them off as people. You know, they won't be, you know, kids that can't hold conversations with their peers or with older than them. They will be people who are comfortable and confident in rooms and will walk into a room with a big proud chest. So I think probably even without you realising, the long-term effects and the long-reaching effects of that are going to be huge.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Creating people as well as the players, isn't it?
It's a huge thing going around at the moment, but I think people are realising how important it is.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it is hot at the moment, isn't it? Some people just say it for the sake of it, but a lot of people are starting to actually realise that it is the way to go.
Oh, for sure, absolutely.
And another thing that I've taken from Eddie Jones was how he would say, right, to the England team, right, boys, we need a meeting, meet here at 10 o'clock in the morning, blah, blah, blah. And all the players would be in the room and they'd think, well, bloody hell, where are they? Where's all the coaching team? And Eddie would just send a text to the captain or whoever and he'd say, not coming, it's up to you guys. You come out with some, you know, playing points or tactics or whatever. And I love that because that's just putting the ownership right on the players, isn't it?
Yeah, funny enough, you've just beat me to my next little point I sort of scribbled down around this question. He was fantastic at building an environment where everyone was always on their toes. But in the right way, you know, he added pressure and pushed people out of their comfort zones in the right way. But going back to my philosophy of being able to adapt, comfortable being uncomfortable, it was, you know, his was always expect the unexpected, which, you know, I suppose similar lines to be comfortable being uncomfortable. But it's just, if you keep exposing players, no matter what level, at different environments where they have to find different solutions, then I believe they will become better at just finding out what information to pick up from any scenario, whether they've seen it 10 times or this is the first time ever, and say, right, what's relevant here? What's important? How do I overcome this? Whether it's there's no coaches here, but we've got a bunch of players, let's create a meeting out of it. Whether it's I've got a 2-on-1 in the wide channel with a defender who's turned his hips on me, how can I release my support player? My philosophy is massively around, and again, we'll touch on this for my one-to-one stuff, is give the players the tools and then keep putting them environments that test their decision-making around the tools they've got available. And he was whether that was the secret meetings or changing meeting venues to see who would figure it out and turn up quick enough, or whether it was the massively high intensity he brought into his training sessions. And eventually that unexpected doesn't become any unexpected because you're always on your toes waiting for the next change. And maybe your perception or your ability to tune into these acute little changes becomes heightened. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've massively picked up with my team stuff, with my individual stuff as well, really, is say one thing, do another, or tell them this, but secretly you're doing that. And how quick can they pick it up? And all of those stuff around, you know, reacting and adapting to chaos, really.
Yeah. And I've got a question for you about him. Last one. So in the videos, he is so calm when he's coaching. And I believe that is how he is. But I just wondered whether it was for the camera as well. What you've been around him probably when there's no cameras there. Is he as calm as he is in the videos?
9 times out of 10 he is. He will obviously understand when to raise a voice and put the pressure on. And of course, he's at that elite spectrum where every little percentage counts. And if he's not getting quite what he wants out of them and he sets very high expectations, then he will be stern when he needs to. But I think he's just set an environment where he doesn't need to do that because he makes the players want to perform to their best. And it's very rare that, you know, I never saw him give, you know, the hairdryer treatment to anyone or, he'll definitely be stern in his expectations, and he's created an environment where the players want to be stern in their own expectations as well. But no, he's a very cool, calm, calculated character. I think that comes down to 100% confidence in what he wants and how he's going to deliver it and what he wants to achieve. And no, certainly not for show. He's a very genuine guy. Very genuine.
Yeah. No, he's one of quite a few. Well, there's a few. Pep Guardiola, obviously from a football background, you know, I idolise him. There's a few others that they just get it. And well, it just fits in with the way I like it and you like it, really.
Oh, for sure. If you look at the All or Nothing with Pep Guardiola, just how he's always challenging them, you're right, to be more than themselves, to be more for the team and to get the best out of everyone collectively, how he knows how to, you know, there's all the videos going about where they've just won the league or the cup final, and he's questioning players about what they could or couldn't do next time, the way Klopp can control a whole stadium of emotion, let alone his players. It's more than just, like I keep referring back to, like the X's and O's on your piece of paper or on the field. It's how all of that combines to bring out the greatest in a group.
Yeah, it is. My next question for you is, how do you plan what you're going to work on? Because you do a lot of one-to-one. So I'll just give a bit of background on this. This is how I actually found you.
Yes.
So your one-to-one that you did, someone shared this video and I was like, oh, what's that? I don't know what that is. And I actually didn't watch it the first time. And then I saw it pop up again. I was like, oh, I'll have a look at this. I've got a bit more time now. And I watched it. It was only like 30 seconds long, wasn't it?
Yeah, a minute max, but yeah.
Oh, it was a minute.
And
I was like, hold on a minute. I've got to watch that again. And it took me two or three times to take it in. And then from a footballing background to a rugby background, and I watched it and I was like, oh my God, that was amazing. I've got to share this with my friend. Yeah, look at this. And the way, do you want to describe it, or do you want me to describe like how you coach in one-to-ones?
We'll kind of flow it all in together. So
yeah, go on.
In terms of how I plan my one-to-ones, I'll always have a conversation with the players, what they want to achieve. Now, of course, with kids, whether that's via a parent or, you know, I want an idea of what they want to work on and what they want to achieve out of that. Now, I think it's really important, and I've said it on a couple of my other videos, we need to understand what is important to the players. We can't force our thoughts and views and opinions of the game and what they need to complete the game or solve the game on them. It's got to be what they truly believe in, because if they believe in it, they'll commit themselves to it. So I always want to start off from a base of understanding what is important to them in their skill base or in their approach to the game. So from there, I've kind of got a few routes that I'd like to go through. And it just comes back to it. You know, you build your experience banks of games that work or little practices that work or skill things that work. So my very first session, if I go back to the young lad in the video, okay, throw me a few passes. Let's just get a feel for what we want to work on from you, your scrum half pass. So I know we want to work on speed off the floor because I think, you know, speed of delivery from your scrum half's key. Actually, there's a few little tweaks I can make about your body shape, about how your hands go through the ball. And from there, I've got a few different avenues and sort of tricks in my back pocket and practices in my back pocket that I can take the session through. So for me, it's always got to start that one-to-one stuff is, what does the player want? What do they feel is important for their development? I'm just the facilitator in that, who might have a little bit of more knowledge. Or I'm that step back and I can see them from an angle that they can't see themselves. Or maybe I've got a little way that I can tease that idea out of them.
So if you had, let's just say you had a player and path A was the one that you sort of wanted him to go down because you thought it would be best for his development. And path B was the one that he wanted to go down. I mean, sort of like technique or tactical or positional wise, would you sort of say, hey, you know, this way is better, or would you let him go down path B, actually find out maybe I should have gone down A?
So there's a couple of ways you can answer that, and it varies from technique and tactical as well. For me, there is no perfect technique because there is so many variables to every touch you make in football. you know, where is the ball coming from me? Where is the defender? How quick is he approaching me? Can I turn out and find another passing lane? Or, and it's the same with rugby. Okay, I've caught the ball here, but who is in front of me? Is it a prop? Is it a winger? What angle are they coming at to me? How much time have I got? Have I caught the ball properly? So I believe there's a few key points that we need in certain technique, but I don't think there can be a perfect one-size-fits-all technique. So if I take scrum half passing, because we'll go on to the video that you're referring to, I believe that we want to have the ball on the back foot, because then we can transfer not only our arms, but our body and our leg weight through the ball. I believe that rather than focusing on spinning the ball, we need to be focusing on pushing the hand through the ball. And then I want the ball finishing to the, or sorry, the hand finishing to the target, the back passing hand. Now, however the ball comes off of your fingers, do you finger roll? Do you wrist flick? That's going to be individual to every player. So some, sorry, I know we said we didn't want to talk in jargon. So some scrummers will pass and generate the spin on their pass by really rolling their wrist over the top of the ball.
Yep.
Some scrummers will focus more on how the ball finishes from their fingers, and they might snap their index finger to their palm, and that little bit of grip off the end is what generates the spin. For me, if the ball's getting from floor to target, good height, good speed, good accuracy, I don't really care if you're a wrist passer or a finger passer. That's the Adam pass. That's the Ben pass. Mm-hmm. So for me, there's not one size fits all. So I might have a brilliant idea of how I want to pass, but that's not how you can pass. So let's meet in the middle, or let's accentuate your personal technique. Now, when it comes down to the tactical route, like you said, actually, they want to go down here. Who am I to tell them they're wrong? Because I'm not in their brain. I haven't experienced that situation from their lens, and I don't know their beliefs or their trust in their ability to overcome it. So there's another video on my social media where I'm taking a player through some 1v1 stuff. I don't understand how he reads my body, reads the space available, reads his ability and how he combines them to then step me this way or sprint past me that way. Plus, I also believe that you need to allow your players a bit of trial and error to make up their minds for themselves. Okay, you think you can do it this way? Go and do it. Did it work that time? Yes, fine. Carry on doing it. No, it didn't. Okay, well, what can you learn from that to tweak? Okay, well, here's version 2.1. Okay, that didn't quite work. Let's create version 2.2. So I think, I hope that wasn't too convoluted a way. I think, like, I'll go back to what I said before. I think we're here to facilitate and make or allow the players to make sense of their own world around them.
Yeah, and it goes back to what you were saying about you're giving them the tool and they find their own way of using that.
So if we then loop this back to the video that you're referring to, and if some of your listeners haven't watched it. So I was trying to work on the scrum half's ability to move the ball away from the ruck, but under pressure. Now, what the video doesn't quite show, and this wasn't a trick of camera, or it just, we'd done a bit of work on passing from the hip. So taking the ball to your hip and then being able to generate a quick punch of your passing hand through the ball. But what the player didn't know is that he was going to need to use that tool later. We've just worked on that tool. So in this video, we played a real simple game. If he passed the ball to his dad, he won a point. If I spoiled that pass, I won a point. So I started a little distance away from him. He scores a point. He scores a point. I start to creep closer to him to a stage where I'm within reach of him and I can slap his hand away and I can start scoring points. So what I'm doing now is giving him a problem. Scully keeps, or Ben keeps slapping my hand away. What tool have I got in my box? So if you watch the question, watch the video. I keep saying, solve the problem, just solve the problem. He asked the question, do I have to stay here or can I move? And I kind of knew where he was going, but I just said, solve the problem. All of a sudden, he steps away from me, gets the ball on his hip, creates that hip pass that we've just worked on. So for me, I've given him the tool. I've given him the problem, but I haven't told him what tool to use. And through his trial and error, he's picked the take the ball away and pass off my hip tool.
Yeah. Oh, it was superb. Looked so simple, but obviously what you just said there, you've gone into the context of, you know, what you'd been working on before that hip pass. And it just shows what, if in a pressured environment, you know, if he's got the tools, he will find out a way to solve the problem, as you said.
So then that's the key to it, is building on it before, building up that tool, but not telling him we're going to use this tool, because all of a sudden it doesn't become his decision. It's just Ben's told me to do this because of this. Now, if I do that, if I just tell him when he's in a game and that situation arises, he can't perceive that a defender's here and he could get within reach. But actually, if I pull away, I'm going to get away from that defender. He just goes, I'm going to throw a pass because I don't really know what pass to make here. And he'll keep getting his hand slapped down if he can't perceive that cue and couple it with the appropriate action. So that's why I go back to creating those decision makers who can perceive different environments. I'll just give you some tools. I'll throw you in a weird and wonderful problem. You come up with whatever solution you think is most appropriate. Listen, his solution could have been push me over and pass the ball. I don't care. You've found a solution that works for you. Happy days. So I hope I didn't get too wordy there, and I hope that makes sense for your listeners. But that's kind of my thought process as I'm going through these one-to-one skills.
Yeah, no, I like it. And so you've pretty much answered it, to be honest. But my next question was, how do you promote player ownership in your sessions? Are there any other ways? Like, I don't know. Do you get, I'm just trying to think on my feet here. Do you get them to reflect by watching some of their own performances or watching a certain player at the weekend and then, you know, seeing if they can bring something from there that they've seen that they like?
Yeah, definitely. So obviously I use the video not just for my Instagram and my Twitter, but I use the video to kind of give what I would call a hot review to the player. So they can do a few passes or they can do a bit of footwork, and then we can review the video and I can say, what are you noticing about yourself? Or imagine you're the coach and here's your athlete. What would you change? And they can see themselves from that sort of out-of-body experience and go, oh, yeah, I thought my hips were low, but they weren't quite low. Maybe if I open up my stance, keep my chest high, drop my bum, I can get into a more powerful passing position. So we'll use sort of video review on that hot review. A big one I like to use is, and again, this goes back to understanding their needs and what they deem important. I'll do a lot of sort of self-scoring based around technique. So it might be, okay, if we look at a kick out of hand, okay, give me the three things that are most important to you: how I drop the ball, where I drop the ball, what my foot looks like when I strike the ball. Okay, brilliant. So that's your 3 points. Every time you kick me the ball, you're going to score yourself out of three and you're going to justify why you've given me that score. So now we can really attune their focus to three key points that they find most important. And we can make them self-aware enough of the completion of those three key points so that, one, they can let me know how well they perform, but two, in the future, they can self-coach and self-score themselves. Oh, under pressure here, actually, I'm only getting 2 out of 3s because I keep misdropping the ball. So whenever a defender's rushing me, if I just really focus on that ball drop, I can trust the other two will happen anyway. And then we might play some games around, okay, you've got 5 passes. You only count a 3 out of 3 pass. Let's see how many 3 out of 3s out of 5 you can get. So then with putting technique under pressure, and I believe technique under pressure is how you can create skill. But it's the player telling me what they want to be critiqued on. So those are a couple of ways I kind of give ownership to players in sort of the one-to-one type stuff.
Yeah, no, it's good. And how long are your sessions? An hour?
Yeah, again, it kind of depends on what players want, but generally about an hour, sort of my one-to-one stuff at the moment.
Yeah, so you can get quite a bit in that time, can't you?
And again, it depends what the players want, really. You know, some of them might just want to focus on their scrum half passing. Well, then, okay, we can really go into the finite details of that. But then I will start drip feeding little games in there as well to make sure that it's not boring. So a game that I've played recently a lot, which I love, is sort of passing tic-tac-toe.
Crosses. Yeah, I saw it. I saw your video. Yeah.
But then you can go into so many, you know, different avenues and depths of that. So it could be you just make a pass to win that cone and you've got to get 3 in a row. Now, the tactics behind that is, where do I position my cones? What cones am I attacking? Actually, do I need to go and steal a cone off Ben because he looks like he's creating a line? But then you can refine that even more to say, okay, if you hit me, you steal the cone. But if you hit me with a 3 out of 3 pass, you lock that cone down and I can't steal it off you. all of a sudden the pressure is on for them to not only be accurate, but be accurate over their 3 points that are important. And that's where you're putting that technique under pressure now, especially if I've got two in a row and they need to win that third one off me, then all of a sudden there's huge amounts of pressure there. And that's when you can tell if it's true skill, because it can be replicated every time under different pressure conditions.
Yeah. I want to take you into my football environment.
Please
because
do,
I've got a quick, I've got a question for you that actually happened last night. So first session back, you know, let's just play games. Let's just have them happy and whatnot. So they're playing a big match, big yep. football game. It was, I think it was either 7v6 or 6v5.
Cool.
And one of the boys, he wanted to play in defence. And I said, yeah, okay, that's fine. And then he actually said, Toby, do you want to play with me in defence? So he'd chosen his position and also tried to get someone with him. So they played there, and about half an hour went past. And I said to my other coach, I'm just going to step in here with a little bit of something, because for me, this player had only seen one picture of the game. So, and that was always the ball in front of him and the other team coming at him and attacking him.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I said to him, Josh, I'd like you to go up and play in midfield for 15 minutes, please. Just to see different pictures, to have more people around you, because I want to see how you do in there. And he was a bit reluctant to do it. And the consequence of that was the other team broke away on a 2-1, his mate that he had at the back with him. They scored, and he was, you know, sort of putting his arms out going, I'd have tackled him if I was there, you know, like this to me. And then we had a little discussion again, and I said, I totally agree with you, Josh. You would have got him or stood more of a chance of getting him if you were there and not in midfield. It's my fault. I just wanted to try you there. But I came away from that session thinking, have I just sort of broken our relationship a little bit there? Because I've asked him to do something and now it hasn't really worked in his eyes. He wanted to stay as a defender. Why didn't I just let him?
First of all, I would suggest that you haven't broken your relationship, because as a coach, it takes real bravery to admit we're wrong sometimes. Love the fact that you've gone up to him and said, look, I got that wrong. I wanted to try something, and I'm sure you would have. You've reinforced that you know his super strength, or what he perceives to be his super strength. And you've also, I think, shown real vulnerability there in the right way to say, look, I wanted to try something. You've made him a part of the process as well. Like, I wanted to try something here. Okay, it didn't work in this situation, but at least now I hope, and I'm sure he will understand that you understand what he wants out of the game, but you're just trying to push him in a new way.
Yeah, I know, but I feel bad for doing it, because listening to you talk, it's their game. It's not mine. It's not what I believe in. It's what they want.
Well, please don't take what I'm saying as gospel, because I have definitely been that coach that's seen a player hanging out on the wing and said, you cannot be on the wing anymore. You have to be through midfield. And I've had those situations where it has worked brilliantly, and I've had those situations where it hasn't worked at all. So, I've definitely felt your pain. And I think the fact that you've been open and honest with him and said, I just wanted you to see the game from a new angle, I think he'll respect that.
Yeah. And what I actually planned, I've actually come out of it in a positive. So I'm now thinking, I'll talk to every player one-to-one at some point in the next session, and I'll have a piece of paper for all of them, and I'm going to write down some key points. Basically, who are you and what do you want to be, or who do you want to be?
I think that's a great idea.
And,
really cool,
you know,
idea.
Then I can sort of get, again, where I'm trying to go with my coaching, get into their head, and I can understand, actually, okay, to Josh, it's really important that his team maybe win or maybe concede the fewest goals, or he makes 5 tackles in a game, or, you know, instead of like, well, Adam doesn't think that I run enough today.
But I think that question, who do you want to be? I think that's amazing because it gives you the understanding of what they feel important. So young Josh, whatever his name was, I think you said Josh, or
yeah,
he might want to be the best defender on the team. Well, you now understand how to help him through that process. And you can also put some ownership on him. Okay, Josh, you want to be the best defender. What do you need to do? What do you need to work on? How can we make this work together? So I think that's a cool question, man. I think that was that's a really good idea moving forward.
I think so. And then, and I'll say to him, if you ever feel like moving and trying striker or midfielder, just come, you know, just say, just come and see.
I think that's brilliant. And again, you go back to your question, how do we give our players ownership? He can make that decision as and when to move forward. Another way I've tried, if we want to be, you know, if we want to think about player decision-making, reading scenarios, you could give him the challenge of saying, getting 10 touches in the middle and top third. He can choose when he goes to get those touches, and he can also choose when to hang back. And then you can just keep asking him through the session. Josh, how's your touches? How's your attacking touches? Have you got them yet? I've only got three. Okay, find more scenarios to go and get attacking touches.
That's a really good point, actually, because what I was going to try and bed into my philosophy was a football pitch with three horizontal zones, defending, midfield, attacking. And I wanted them to just effortless and just move around all the zones, not just stay in one.
And
that's all right. That might be a much better way of wording it.
And I can understand why you're trying to do that, because it's that total football philosophy. Although he's your centre back, he's just as comfortable pushing upfield, people moulding around him. I totally understand that. That might be, if you encourage him to go and find X amount of touches, that's his challenge. He's still got that decision of when to do it. And then that's where you blend both of your thought processes together.
That's another thing I'm taking away. that's a brilliant point.
And then the other thing you could do, and it kind of ties in with, you was going to ask me a question about how do we introduce the maybe the more smaller or timid player. You could create sort of bonus points if Josh is at the centre of a goal. If a goal is scored by Josh, it's worth 5 goals. If a goal is set up by Josh, it's worth 3 goals. If Josh gets a touch in the passage of play that leads to the goal in the top third, it's worth 2 goals. That way he thinks, right, I've got added value to the team. His teammates can encourage him to come forward. If we're looking and thinking about the timid player, actually, his teammates, his stronger ones, are looking for him because they understand that this is a 5-point goal and this means I'm going to win. And you get those players that want to win games. Well, fine. Let's not take that out of them. Let's just make sure it's constructive. So maybe that's another middle ground with Josh. Every goal you set up is worth 3.
Yeah. 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 It's not a bad idea, is it? Or you could even say in football, I don't know if you call them overlaps in rugby. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
So even if you said, Josh, you know, if you get 3 overlaps, I'm going to give your team an extra goal every time you get 3.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you.
I just think that's your nice middle ground where you're still encouraging his decision making, but you're challenging him in the way you'd like him to. And then it just comes back to that brilliant relationship you're building with them. Why did you think I was doing that? Where's our middle ground? What can we do to help you do that more often, or what benefits are there to you doing that at this time? And then you kind of use your supporting questioning around that.
No, it's a really good point and a good way of doing it, I think. Talking about rugby players, youth rugby players, really. What sort of mental attributes do they need?
I still think this will go up to the senior game as well. I think you've got a generation of players who are being coached in this new way and moving through it. So I think mental attributes that we need to be improving in general is what you'd call that growth mindset and being excited about exploring situations. And I suppose that resilience and bravery to understanding that failure is part of the learning process. So if I go and again, I'll put it into a football context because I think most of your player, your listeners are probably footballers, but I could be wrong. Please, if I'm generalising, please tell me. But yeah, it's giving your players that bravery to say, I think I see a through ball here, I'm going to play it. Yes, I read that situation right, awesome. Or no, I didn't, the defender closed it down. I understand the relationship between the space and the speed of my pass and how I can sneak a through ball through there.
Yeah,
I suppose the equivalent to the through ball in rugby is the grubber kick. So that kick that bounces along the ground through defences. That's our equivalent of through ball and playing the ball forward into that space behind defences. Okay, can I get my players excited enough about wanting to try that, no matter if they're a prop or a winger, and then going, oh, well, it didn't work this time, but I think I see this opportunity again. Can I go and try it again? Okay, it didn't work a second time, but doesn't matter. I'm going to go and give it another try and figure it out until it works.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
And I think with kids, especially around your age as well, it's the bravery to do that in front of your peers.
It is, yeah. Yeah, but also the bravery to do it in front of, you know, your parents or whoever, isn't it? I mean, for example, from the football side of it, if you've got a defender inside their own box and they're doing stepovers or, you know, they're doing skills. I mean, some people, some coaches, you know, you'll hear, get rid of it, you know, all this. But I love my players to have the confidence to do that in there. And if they lose it, okay, try it again.
So, you know, for me, it's then about what do you reward? I would reward decision making and I would reward intent. So why did you do three stepovers? Well, I thought I could move the attacker's hips, shift in one way to play and dribble out the other way. Love it. Great decision. It didn't come off, but you've given me a reason. Top work.
Or it's
why did you try and play that through ball? Well, the idea was to get it into the space behind. Brilliant. The intent was right. Okay, you didn't execute it. I'll help you execute it next time. And then being really vocal about that around the other players and around the parents so that almost by osmosis, they realise, hold on, I'm not going to get shouted at by Adam if I try something here so long as I can give him a reason.
You've got to create creative and confident players, haven't we?
Yeah, for sure. I absolutely agree. It's now if they're making the same mistake over and over again, maybe our intervention's got to be a bit different. We've got to ask different questions, or we've got to tell them, look, if you see this, this might not allow this, or if you see this, why don't we go this way? So although we said earlier in our conversation, you've got to let them explore their own path. If that own path still keeps coming up against the brick wall, that's the art of when do we come in and tell or question or intervene in a different way. But if you can keep praising intent and decision-making over execution, you will get players that want to keep decision-making.
Yeah, that's it. It's about letting them find their own path. But if, like you say, yes, it's a great term. If they are hitting a brick wall, you've just got to adjust their angle, haven't you? And hope that they go round it.
Which then goes back to the start of this. There is still the room for the tell. This is my knowledge. This is what I'm going to impart on you. It's just the awareness of the coach to say, when is it question time? When is it explore time? Okay, I've got to step in and give them a hand here with a bit of tell. Then step back, explore.
But also the way you say it, isn't it?
Oh,
you know,
for sure.
You just, you know, because some people tell it in the wrong way, or some people, you know, I'm sure you do, you say it in the right way. You might say, ah, you know, Josh, yeah, when I was playing, I always used to have that trouble as well. Do you know what I found? And, you know, oh, yeah, what? You know, just getting them realise you've been a player once.
It sounds like you've got a real good grip of how to use empathy in your coaching with the players. Like you said, showing your vulnerability to Josh earlier, or that little anecdote. Yeah, I used to do that. But what I found was that's what's going to win players over to you, I think, Adam. I think that's a great approach to it.
Yeah, and I don't like talking about myself too much, but I feel I've got them at a good place. Yeah.
It sounds like it, mate. It sounds like
But then last night I just came home from it and I thought, oh yeah, I failed in there.
Listen, so a lot of the time in my one-to-one coaching, I'll say, look, I think I've got an idea, run with this with me because I'm figuring this out as we go along. And I'll often say that on my first session with players. Look, I've got a few things that I want to do. I want to figure out what you want me to do. Actually, I might get a little brainwave mid-session and I'll tell you I've had a little brainwave and we'll explore it together. That, yes. I think that vulnerability from you as a coach, I think that will win players over. So I don't think you failed anyone last night. You've learnt and you're brave enough to realise you've learnt alongside the players.
Yeah, and we can push on from there, can't we?
I think if we was having this conversation and you were saying, well, I told him to be in midfield, they scored, he's wrong. There, you've got a bit of an issue. But the fact that you're reflecting on it so quickly, the fact that you're aware enough of yourself to realise that this was a learning moment for me, I think that's it puts you in a great place, mate.
Yeah. I'm just looking through my questions here.
Yeah, what have
we
got?
Because we've jumped a bit, haven't we? We've answered.
Yeah, we're kind of bouncing all over, aren't we? So I do apologise.
I know. It's always the way. I'm always doing that.
Yeah, no.
So, do you rotate positions in youth rugby?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this one. So the RFU, kind of the new age grade rules, where they change the game. Because I know one of your questions, see, look, this is my fault bouncing you around. But I know one That's of your right. questions was from the outsiders, rugby can seem a bit complicated. And how do you kind of coach these different topics and philosophies? And I think at times that can be a bit of a burden to our game. You know, jumpers for goalposts. Football is very easy to just pick up. There's a goal. Get this ball over there using your feet. Now, again, I don't want to upset your audience, but it's a sport that people can pick up and just practice readily. Whereas rugby, run forward, pass backwards, but he can't be in front of me because he's offside and he can't be here because and what? And there's a ruck. Where do I enter it from? And I think that's one of the detriments of our game. Now, the great thing the RFU did was simplify it and say, OK, as you go through each level, we will add a new layer to the game. So under nine is when we introduce the tackle. So it almost becomes a bit more rugby league. Make your tackle, everyone stand up, play the ball and go. Once you've mastered the tackle at under 10, we will introduce the ruck and then we'll introduce the line out. So I think what they did there is brilliant. I was in the RFU as they was bringing that out into the community. So I was, you know, passing that on to my community teams that I was looking after.
Yeah.
Now, the good thing about that is when they introduced the, and I'm air quoting here, when they introduced the scrum, it wasn't a pushing scrum. It was the nearest three players joined together, what we call the tower of power, that athletic position bent over at the hinge, at the hips, combine with each other, play the ball in, hooks it away and we go and play. The good thing about that is it gave every player exposure to the scrum. If you're the closest three, just come and give it a go. So I think the RFU are making big strides with that. Now, that's one way of doing it. But my philosophy is if I can give my players a well-rounded skill set, then they will almost rotate their own positions. Now, what I mean by that is, yes, we have our specialists. So you need your front row who can scrummage for safety and for body shape and all of that. You need your second rows who can jump. Your back rows are your stealers of the ball, although anyone can do that. Your scrum halves have a certain type of pass that your wingers might not have, but your wingers have a great ability to beat people. So I understand that we have our specialists, but what I mean by that is if you look at a Kyle Sinclair, a Makavutapola, they're just as comfortable as Owen Farrell as stepping in at that first receiver and allowing people to play off them.
Yeah.
So then within that, they will rotate themselves into a first receiver position, organise people around them and then play the ball. You know, my vision of where I want to take my rugby teams is I don't care what number you've got on your back. You can take the ball and hit a 20-yard spin pass to someone who's in space because that was the right job, not you're a prop and all you do is bash people around and scrummage. So I think if we can round off our players, and again, this goes back to your Josh example, you're trying to round him off so that if he ever finds himself in attacking midfield, not in centre-back, well, we can still get that. Like if you look at, is it Stones, the defender? Some people criticise him for playing around at the back, but actually, how cool is that? Because he's got the confidence to get the ball, find a space and start an attack from nowhere. So I don't care if you're my prop. If you think that the right pass is 20 metres away and you have the balls to do it, go and do it for me. Rotate yourself into that position.
Yeah, I totally agree. And regarding John Stones, he's not, he doesn't, well, what am I trying to say? He's a square peg in a round hole, isn't he? He's not the typical defender. He's got a lot more than that. And he gets ridiculed sometimes because he takes risks. But for me, part of my philosophy is if you haven't taken a risk, what, you know, you haven't done anything exciting.
No, I totally agree. And when those risks pull off, then actually, was it a risk or was it a calculated decision? Yeah. Now, if he's making the risk and like we've said, and it keeps not paying off, fine. Someone's got to have a chat with him. But if he's if he's taking the risk and 8 times out of 10 it's working and you're scoring off of it, then it then comes back to we're still trying to change philosophies how the game should be played, whether it's football or rugby. So, when it comes to training, I'll play games where I'll say, I'll put what we call our front five. So numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, your front row, your second row. Traditionally, back in the day, were your big ball carriers. I'll put them in green bibs and then I'll say, okay, in this game, only the green bibs can be first receivers. So yeah. I'm actively pushing them to rotate their positions. And then later in the session, I'll take off the green bibs, but I'll see which one of them still steps up at first receiver. And then I can question and support around that. So there's all sorts of ways of sneaking that in. You can then sneak that in by praising intent and decision-making over execution. So they get braver at stepping up at first receiver. The more exposure they get there, the better their decision-making and their skill execution will become. And it kind of snowballs from there. And then the more we can round them off, then you will get that total rugby. The rugby version of Johan Cruyff's philosophy of anyone can play anywhere and anyone will fit in around them.
Yeah, yeah. And my last question is... Oh, God, I've lost it. Sorry. What would your typical team session look like? So, for example, you've got in football, people do a lot of game-based sessions. So certainly something I like. Other people are quite army style and they'll have, they do a lot of fitness beforehand. They'll go over hurdles. In the rugby session, what do you do? What do you do, basically?
Mine has changed so much over the years from what I've learned and bits and pieces I've picked up, looking into different philosophies like tactical periodization and things like that. And for me, it goes right back to what I said my philosophy was at the start. I want my players being comfortable in chaos. So sometimes I will start a session with a game to check their learning from previous weeks. What are they retaining? Yeah. So, for example, on Tuesday, we might have worked on a certain playoff of a line out. So the very first thing they'll do on Thursday is line out on the halfway, go. 5, 4, 3, 2. I want to see how quickly they're organising themselves. Are they choosing the play that we worked on Tuesday based on the right cues that they're seeing, or have they made another decision because of this or whatever that may be? So sometimes I'll just chuck them straight in the deep end with a game or a game scenario, a match scenario, go and solve that problem while you're cold, quote unquote. Other times we'll start with a bit of skill because that skill will underpin something that we do later. Or it'll be a small portion of the game where we just want to rep that with different scenarios. So it might be a 5-on-3, but I'm going to keep changing what the defense looks like in front of the attack. So bouncing around a bit here, but so we'll have sort of our mini moves in rugby, what I would call a mini move. So we might have an Adam ball, which is one play and one shape. And then we might have a Ben ball, which is another play and another shape. And they might be determined by different pictures you're seeing in front of you from the defense, whether the defense is narrow, whether the defense is spread. So I'll have the attack facing away from the defense. I'll paint a picture with the defense. Then I'll say to the attack, spin. You've got 5 seconds to read the scenario, call a Ben or an Adam ball, and then go and execute it. So we might start our sessions with that because it's going to be something that I want to underpin in a game later. So I want to keep mine varied. 90% of what I do will be learning through games with different rules, different stipulations. So there might be hidden rules. They might have to guess the other team's rules. And if they do, they get bonus points. I might say to the attack, you're trying to do this and see how long it takes the defense to figure out and overcome. They might have certain aims. So I want you to score within 30 seconds, find a way, whether that's kick, pass, run. It might be that you've got two touches in your half, but four touches in the other half. So you've got to figure out, can we get over the halfway line within these passages of play, or actually do I have to kick and pin the other team and force them to kick the ball back to us to go and attack again? And then there'll be the little skill breakouts to kind of underpin that, really. So, yeah, I never want, much like my answer, I never really know, I would never want the players to know where they're going, really. I want them to keep figuring things out as they go along.
Yeah, no, it's good. And I just want to touch, I've been thinking of something just while you've been explaining that. So at the start, you said every session, every Tuesday, you recap and you want to test them and see if they remember what they were working on last week. How important is that sort of passive pressure in a coaching session? So, for example, you might have, so you're playing a game and the kids, you've got some kids who will sort of go through the motions a little bit and, oh, well, that session is over. I can sort of forget about that now. Whereas if you have that coach pressure, and they think, oh, okay, Ben's going to test us from last week here. I need to remember this. How important is that for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's really, well, again, it kind of depends where you're, what your players want to become and where they want to become. But if we're challenging them to be their best, whatever that their best may be, it's really important that we're testing the fact that they are learning and adapting and making some sort of change over a passage of time. Now, that might be, again, if I go back to my one-to-one stuff, I've worked with you, your catch and pass on session number one, but that was us just standing and passing to each other. Well, that's a very different skill to on the run. So I might, the next session, start with you passing on the run. But what I'm really testing is, can you remember those two or three key points you gave me when we were standing still? Ball yeah. through the hand, flick my wrist, finish my hand towards you. Again, if we take that to the team context, okay, well, we said that within, if we see a 3-on-2, we're going to attack it in this way. Okay, I might play like you did the other day. I'm going to play an overload attack game. So I'm going to play 15 versus 12. At some point, there will be a 3-on-2. I'm now checking who recognizes that and who couples the appropriate outcome and problem solution to the problem to that. But we've got to put them under that pressure and we've got to sneak that in to realize, are they reading cues? Are they coupling things with what they're perceiving? And are they giving me a rationale behind the problem or the solution to the problem? But we can't tell them that, because that then isn't their decision. It's regurgitating my solution. It's got to be organic. It's got to be their solution. So that's why we want to be checking the learning over passages of play.
It, but what we were talking about with your, like your testing of the children, or players, whoever, adults, when they come to your next session. The only reason I ask that is because when I've done my football qualifications, I did them with this guy. He's really good, but he's very testing. And you knew the next morning that you come in for, you know, part three of your qualification, you knew that you were going to, because we used to do a Friday, Saturday and a Sunday.
Yeah.
You knew that the next morning you'd be in and he would have you up at the front of the class presenting something that you had worked on.
Love
yesterday.
It.
And it was so sweaty. You were like, oh my God, I'm not ready for this. But it did benefit you.
Again, what, like we've said before, it then becomes in the delivery of everything. You're trying to put them under the appropriate amount of pressure for what they can handle and what your environment is. But also letting them realise that should we make a mistake or should we forget something, we will be supported. So I will say, here's your line out over here, go. If I see what we worked on, brilliant. If I don't see what we worked on, but they still get success, brilliant. They've seen something I haven't seen. If I don't see what we've worked on, okay, well, guys, what could we also do in this scenario? Oh, yeah, actually, we worked on X, Y, and Z the other day. Okay, retake the line out. Just go and explore that. and see, is it the right? Listen, I'll hold my hands up. It might be the right, it might be the wrong scenario here. But it then comes down to how you're presenting that challenge to them and making them aware that it's all part of the learning curve. Again, the more you kind of do these things, the more they realize, okay, it's going to happen anyway at some point. Let's be attuned to it and aware of it. And actually, it's because Adam wants the best for us.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And well, that's what it boils down to, doesn't it? We want to improve them as people and players and make a difference, really, don't we?
Oh, for sure, man, for sure.
So that's the end of my questions. I've just got one more that I always do at the end for everybody. I've asked you to pick your five-a-side team or five players. They're probably going to be from a rugby background for you, which is going to be good. And basically players that you like the way they play or have influenced you or just generally all of your coaching into five players.
Yeah, love it. So for me, I've tried to pick a kind of across the team, really. So as a front row player would be someone like a Kyle Sinclair / Mako Vunipola / Jamie George. So kind of the England front row, probably if I had to pick Sinclair, just like I said, that those three guys are breaking the mold of what a front row forward is. Yeah. The amount of work they get through, but it's varied work again. Or if you look at Kyle Sinclair, he plays a massively pivotal role of bringing forwards in and off of him in the England sort of attacking shape. Just how comfortable he is with the ball in hand to take the ball 1-2 step just before he gets hit, move the ball onto someone to put them into a space that he's created, because he's also a bloody strong carrier and he's got that all round threat. You know, if you look at Jamie George in the 2016 England tour to Australia, setting Owen Farrell up with a grubber kick, a front row kicking and being comfortable enough to do that. So for me, any one of those three, because they're breaking the mold of what their position traditionally is.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is a New Zealand player, Brody Retallick, very much for the same thing, but he was probably doing this even before they were. The guy's a monster. He's 6'7" plus, 110 kilos. So he's an absolute physical specimen, a battering ram. But again, he's so comfortable in the wide channels, creating and executing 2v1s and being able to run, catch, pass, carry. Just his whole round game is, again, redefining what forwards should be sort of trying to achieve.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, being a scrum half myself, Aaron Smith from New Zealand or Faf de Klerk from South Africa, just because of how quick their distribution from the ruck is. And I believe that's not, it's obviously the skill of their pass, but it's their scanning on the approach to the situation.
Yeah.
So they're finding all these different cues from their teammates and people around them. And so when they're there, their decision is made and bang, it's gone. And then for me, probably Aaron Smith just pips it because his attention to detail in his own personal skill development is just incredible. There's plenty of stuff you can find over social media about him. And although I do like a very relaxed environment and I want my players to feel relaxed, and like I said to you, there's no perfect one-size-fits-all technique, I also do believe that when you find your 2 to 3 key points, take real pride in executing them at the best of your ability.
Yeah, yeah.
Number four would be Danny Cipriani, just because when he's in his flow, he's a bit of a magician. And some of his wonder passes that were all over Facebook and Instagram and social media last year, people could say he was fluky, he was playing them on an advantage, he was this, that and the other. Or you could just admire that he has read a situation and backed his own skill set to create a bit of magic.
Yeah, exactly.
At the highest level, that's Premiership. Yeah. You know, quote unquote, jobs are on the line if you lose a game, and he's still willing to loop a 45 meter pass over the top of three defenders because he backs himself to find the space.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the last one is Johnny May, just because the game is so easy when you're that quick. So to watch him, you know, the way he glides, his athleticism, the way he's developed under Eddie Jones from just being a flyer to actually a winger that comes in and finds so much work, pops up all over the field, but can then just get the ball on the wing and just gas you because he's quick enough. I would love to be that quick. I would have been a much different player if I had that ability.
And if you had to have a manager to manage all of them, who would it be? Would it be Eddie?
Of course, it's got to be. I love his approach, as I've described to you earlier. But then I also like Pat Lamb and what he's doing at Bristol Bears. You can look on YouTube about the environment he's creating. He's big on creating cultures. He will have he encourages sort of personal handshakes between players, which could seem cheesy, but actually that really connects people. He believes in a really expansive style of rugby, even if that means he lost his first few professional games, but he stayed true to his philosophy. And now they're in a position where they could get a playoff and potentially win the league this year with the style that they're playing. So between him and Eddie, I'd more than happily have them as my assistant coaches.
Yeah. Well, it's been brilliant. You've had some, you've made me think of my coaching, and you know, I like that. I mean, I'm always trying to better myself and take little ideas from other people and different sports.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in crossover of sports, and I'm always looking at different sports for different ideas of attack or defence or philosophies. And listen, I've learned a few little gems off you as well. I love that question of who are you and who do you want to be? That's definitely something that I'm going to take to my one-to-one, because it opens up that ability to make their development a two-way street. So I am pinching that one back off you, Adam.
Cool. No, it's been really good. We'll have to think up some more topics and do another one at some point.
Mate,
it's been really good.
I'd absolutely love to. Thank you to your listeners if you've sort of bared with me for this long. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to chat on here, mate. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I'd love to do it again.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. We are on Twitter, so please give us a share, give us a like, give us a follow @_coachlife. And me, your host, I am on Twitter @thefatperlo.